File 9. April the 18th. Today I found an enormous increase in the moon's apparent bulk, and the evidently accelerated velocity of my descent began to fill me with alarm. It will be remembered that in the earliest stage of my speculations upon the possibility of a passage to the moon, the existence in its vicinity of an atmosphere dense in proportion to the bulk of the planet had entered largely into my calculations. This, too, in spite of many theories to the contrary, and, it may be added, in spite of a general disbelief in the existence of any lunar atmosphere at all. But in addition to what I have already urged in regard to Encke's comet and the zodiacal light, I have been strengthened in my opinion by certain observations of Mr. Schroeter of Lilienthal. He observed the moon when 2 days and a half old in the evening soon after sunset, before the dark part was visible, and continued to watch it until it became visible. The two cusps appeared tapering in a very sharp, faint prolongation, each exhibiting its furthest extremity faintly illuminated by the solar rays, before any part of the dark hemisphere was visible. Soon afterwards, the whole dark limb became illuminated. This prolongation of the cusps beyond the semicircle, I thought, must have arisen from the refraction of the sun's rays by the moon's atmosphere. I computed also the height of the atmosphere, which could refract light enough into its dark hemisphere to produce a twilight more luminous than the light reflected from the earth when the moon is about 32 degrees from the new, to be 1,356 Paris feet. In this view, I suppose the greatest height capable of refracting the solar ray to be 5,376 feet. My ideas upon this topic had also received confirmation by a passage in the 82nd volume of the Philosophical Transactions, in which it is stated that at an occultation of Jupiter's satellites, the third disappeared after having been about 1 second or 2 seconds of time indistinct, and the fourth became indiscernible near the limb. Upon the resistance, or more properly, upon the support of an atmosphere existing in the state of density imagined, I had, of course, entirely depended for the safety of my ultimate descent. Should I then, after all, prove to have been mistaken, I had in consequence nothing better to expect as a finale to my adventure than being dashed into atoms against the ragged surface of the satellite. And indeed, I had now every reason to be terrified. My distance from the moon was comparatively trifling, while the labor required by the condenser was diminished not at all, and I could discover no indication whatever of a decreasing rarity in the air. April the 19th. This morning, to my great joy, about 9 o'clock, the surface of the moon being frightfully near, and my apprehensions excited to the utmost, the pump of my condenser at length gave evident tokens of an alteration in the atmosphere. By 10, I had reason to believe its density considerably increased. By 11, very little labor was necessary at the apparatus, and at 12 o'clock, with some hesitation, I ventured to unscrew the tourniquet, when, finding no inconvenience from having done so, I finally threw open the gum elastic chamber and unrigged it from around the basket. As might have been expected, spasms and violent headache were the immediate consequences of an experiment so precipitate and full of danger. But these and other difficulties attending respiration, as they were by no means so great as to put me in peril of my life, I determined to endure as best I could, in consideration of my leaving them behind me momently in my approach to the denser strata near the moon. This approach, however, was still impetuous in the extreme, and it soon became alarmingly certain that although I had probably not been deceived in the expectation of an atmosphere dense in proportion to the mass of the satellite, still I had been wrong in supposing this density, even at the surface, at all adequate to the support of the great weight contained in the basket of my balloon. Yet this should have been the case, and in an equal degree as at the surface of the Earth, the actual gravity of bodies at either planet supposed in the ratio of the atmospheric condensation. That it was not the case, however, my precipitous downfall gave testimony enough. Why it was not so can only be explained by a reference to those possible geological disturbances to which I have formerly alluded. At all events, I was now close upon the planet, and coming down with the most terrible impetuosity. I lost not a moment, accordingly, in throwing overboard first my ballast, then my water kegs, then my condensing apparatus and gum elastic chamber, and finally every article within the basket. But it was all to no purpose. I still fell with horrible rapidity, and was now not more than half a mile from the surface. As a last resource, therefore, having got rid of my coat, hat, and boots, I cut loose from the balloon the basket itself, which was of no inconsiderable weight, and thus, clinging with both hands to the network, I had barely time to observe that the whole country, as far as the eye could reach, was thickly interspersed with diminutive habitations, ere I tumbled headlong into the very heart of a fantastical-looking city, and into the middle of a vast crowd of ugly little people, who none of them uttered a single syllable, or gave themselves the least trouble to render me assistance, but stood like a parcel of idiots, grinning in a ludicrous manner, and eyeing me and my balloon askant, with their arms set akimbo. I turned from them in contempt, and gazing upwards at the earth so lately left, and left perhaps for ever, beheld it like a huge dull copper shield, about 2 degrees in diameter, fixed immovably in the heavens overhead, and tipped on one of its edges with a crescent border of the most brilliant gold. No traces of land or water could be discovered, and the whole was clouded with variable spots, and belted with tropical and equatorial zones. Thus, may it please your excellencies, after a series of great anxieties, unheard-of dangers, and unparalleled escapes, I had, at length, on the 19th day of my departure from Rotterdam, arrived in safety at the conclusion of a voyage undoubtedly the most extraordinary and the most momentous ever accomplished, undertaken, or conceived by any denizen of Earth. But my adventures yet remain to be related, and indeed your excellencies may well imagine that after a residence of 5 years upon a planet not only deeply interesting in its own peculiar character, but rendered doubly so by its intimate connection in capacity of satellite with a world inhabited by man, I may have intelligence for the private ear of the States College of Astronomers of far more importance than the details, however wonderful of the mere voyage which so happily concluded. This is, in fact, the case. I have much, very much, which it would give me the greatest pleasure to communicate. I have much to say of the climate of the planet, of its wonderful alternations of heat and cold, of unmitigated and burning sunshine for one fortnight, and northern polar frigidity for the next, of a constant transfer of moisture by distillation like that in vacuo from the point beneath the sun to the point the furthest from it, of a variable zone of running water, of the people themselves, of their manners, customs, and political institutions, of their peculiar physical construction, of their ugliness, of their want of ears, those useless appendages in an atmosphere so peculiarly modified, of their consequent ignorance of the use and properties of speech, of their substitute for speech and a singular method of intercommunication, of the incomprehensible connection between each particular individual in the moon with some particular individual on the earth. A connection analogous with and depending upon that of the orbs of the planet and the satellite, and by means of which the lives and destinies of the inhabitants of the one are interwoven with the lives and destinies of the inhabitants of the other. And above all, if it so please your excellencies, above all of those dark and hideous mysteries which lie in the outer regions of the moon, regions which, owing to the almost miraculous accordance of the satellite's rotation on its own axis with its sidereal revolutions about the earth, have never yet been turned, and by God's mercy, never shall be turned to the scrutiny of the telescopes of man. All this and more, much more, would I most willingly detail. But to be brief, I must have my reward. I am pining for a return to my family and to my home, and as the price of any further communication on my part, in consideration of the light which I have it in my power to throw upon the many very important branches of physical and metaphysical science, I must solicit, through the influence of your honourable body, a pardon for the crime of which I have been guilty in the death of the creditors upon my departure from Rotterdam. This, then, is the object of the present paper. Its bearer, an inhabitant of the moon, whom I have prevailed upon and properly instructed to be my messenger to the earth, will await your excellency's pleasure and return to me with the pardon in question, if it can in any manner be obtained. I have the honour to be your excellency's very humble servant, Hans Pfaff.